Let's do it,
John.
Do it. Let's do
so,
it.
Yeah, we're going to aim for 30 minutes or less on new business. Going to be, there's a few things listed, but we're going to just be very brisk because we don't need to get super deep into any of these, I don't think.
Oh, I'm nothing
SMT4,
but deep.
I mean, we've talked about it before. Otherwise, it certainly would be.
Yeah. But I do have more to say about it, though.
I understand. I want you to talk about it. I just want to be brisk.
I'll try.
Pick up from where you left off.
Faster paced than the game itself.
Okay? Guillaume is like Let's straight clap. Out of a cutscene.
So I was on a vacation, and I needed a game, and I wasn't sure what game to bring, and I brought SMT4, and I wasn't sure where I was, but I looked,
and I was
there.
It's almost as if you've heard these stories before.
Huh? I know.
All right, let me give you guys fresh notes with the new business.
Guillaume gets more vacation than anybody. Good Lord.
Yeah, I only get, now I get 4 weeks.
Yeah, exactly.
That's pretty good.
I get three.
Yeah, I graduated from three, I guess.
I think I get four, I think. I don't know.
But I only took 2 weeks. It's just that includes three weekends.
Yeah, right. I completely understand, dude. Okay, so you guys got the somewhat updated notes there in your business, a little easier to read.
Fuck yeah!
All right, let's clap.
John is psyched.
Yeah,
baby.
I just want to get this thing rolling.
John psyched from his Jeopardy performance.
Just loves 2DS. All right, here we go, baby. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Hello and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. This is episode 348. I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, and with me, as always, are John Lindemann.
Johnny, I've never been more ready to podcast than I am in this moment right now.
So good to have you back, man. You're psyched. Must be all the football.
Oh, yeah.
We also have our illustrious editor, Mr. Guillaume Veillette.
Intergalactic planetary.
And
nice. Correct reference.
You know him, you love him, you hate him. James Jones.
That's kind of mean, actually. I mean, you don't introduce anybody else as being hated.
James.
The reviled James Jones?
I should say the controversial Mr. James Jones.
The too good for you, Mr. James Jones.
Nice.
The Jeopardy champion, James Jones.
Your opinion is factually incorrect. Mr. James Jones, yes, they're all here. We are ready to talk about so much Nintendo stuff. It's been a very exciting, unusual week. And we're going to talk about some of the latest announcements about 2DS, about a Wii U price drop. It's going to get interesting a little bit later in the show. We'll probably fit in some of your emails that kind of work into that conversation as well. But first, we're going to do a very quick new business. And I mean, briskly paced, people. Guillaume is up first.
Yeah, I've downloaded newer Super Mario Bros. Wii. If you guys don't know, if you guys listened to episode 302, I played some sort of like quick level packs, homebrew level packs made by, you know, folks like you and me, that you can play on a hacked Wii and using certain tools and a disc of new Super Mario Bros. And so finally, last June, they finally released a big NSMBW modification. And so I've played through maybe like the first two worlds. I gotta say, like they do, like one thing that I appreciate is that the game is, at least initially, very much, much, much easier than New Super Luigi U. New Super Luigi U, I love when I'm playing in single player, but I tried playing it co-op and it's impossible and end up hating each other. So this is much more... This is much easier. There's like a long, long amount of time allowed to complete levels. Mm. The levels are large. You don't get in each other's way. And they still manage to cram some pretty clever secrets in there. And
so just before we move on, I just want to say something about Luigi U, because you finished that as well, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, clearly the game itself is not too hard for you. But as we've noted many times, I mean, the Wii game and I guess Wii U as well, they really do become harder in multiplayer, which is kind of a strange phenomenon. Right. And I wonder, you know, they put that Nabbit character in there as being the invincible sort of helper character. And it's strange. Like, it feels like maybe the multiplayer was balanced, assuming that someone would be using that character.
Oh, really?
I wonder about that, you know? And so maybe, like, so it's fine, because I've heard of people who have no problem playing it two-player as long as, you know, one of them is their kid on Nabbit. And I've heard that people really praise that, because it's nice to have a character that, you know, has those features so that other people can play it who might not normally be able to.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder if the multiplayer was sort of designed assuming that, and then if you have two people who are a little more competitive or whatever, or just don't want to take the, you know, the cheap character and use a normal one, then it becomes insanely unbalanced.
Yeah. But also there's the fact that I'm playing with someone who has much less experience with these games than I do. And I, yeah, it's ridiculously hard.
Is she using Nabbit or a normal character?
No, a normal character.
That's my point.
Hmm. Yeah.
So like Nabbit, maybe what they sort of expected her to be using, but maybe she doesn't want to. And so now the game becomes.
Well, yeah, just... like kids, I'm sure, are super happy to be invincible, but, you know, it's kind of insulting the skills and intelligence of adults.
Well, you know, I think the other miss here is that Nabbit's such a hideous character.
Yeah.
He looks like, terrible.
He's a deliberately ugly character because he is deliberately kind of an evil... Maybe not evil, he's kind of
he's a mischief, you know, character.
Yeah, he's a... It's kind of makes him unappealing to play as.
Right. But also, like, when I'm playing that game single player, the time limit is so short, and I want to be grabbing every star coin I can, I want to find secrets, so usually I want to be alone, you know, like, not have anyone in my way, and just, power through levels, and, anyway, but if we go back to newer Super Mario Brothers Wii while, like, not only is it better to play co-op, but there's also, like, tons of... I kind of like the element of surprise that I'm getting from it, because I kind of feel like at this point, New Super Mario Brothers, the series, we kind of know what to expect. And these guys hacked the game in such a way that they've introduced elements from past games that we love and that we haven't seen in a long, long time. And I am kind of surprised to see the amount of care and work that they put into it. Like, you have the switches, the exclamation mark switches, that bring, you know, like colored blocks, to past levels and upcoming levels that, you know, that completely change your structure, really. You've got enemies that don't appear in the normal game. You've got different bosses, although those are kind of, I don't know, they're kind of lazy. Like, they come back often, so it's not just Nintendo. Apparently, it's Nintendo fans as well. And there's a couple of things that, you know, don't look so nice. Some of the new textures are really laughable. Like, you start off in a kind of a beach area, and the sand texture is just, it looks like a texture made in MS Paint.
It probably was.
but
sounds like the people behind this may be primarily programmers and designers and maybe not so much artists.
Yeah, but you do get like really fun stuff. Like the very early on in the game, like you get a level that keeps changing as you hit switches. You know, like you hit a switch and a tunnel is, you know, appears, or like your way is suddenly blocked, or all of a sudden like two spiky cannonballs fall from the ceiling on each side of you, and you have to from then on go through the level in between them without touching them. You know, it's really, really fun stuff, and I'm enjoying it. So everyone who has the means to play it should definitely do so.
Nice. And the means include owning the original game, we should
yes.
say.
Yes. Yeah. That's probably the reason why Nintendo hasn't gone after their asses.
Exactly. It's homebrew without, you know, without piracy. So
yep.
That's a good thing. Okay. James is up next with new business.
So I'll talk about two games sort of in parallel really quickly. I have been playing much more aggressively Saints Row the Third, which is going to sound really obsolete in about 5 minutes. But just as an opportunity. They're different, but you know. Just as an opportunity to get that game cheaply, and because I had such a terrible time with GTA 4. And it's...
Oh, Saints Row 3 is a great palate cleanser with GTA 4.
Oh, it's amazing. Even years down the road, it's cathartic to play that game.
I felt exactly the same way.
It's just like, okay, this is better. This is where I want to be in my life. And I mean, there's a whole set of these quests that are really heavily leveraged on Smash TV.
Yeah.
Where basically you play this game called Super Ethical Reality Climax, which is you just kill a bunch of people.
That's awesome.
Well, to appease a mutant professor who has a giant cat head. That's it. And he occasionally pops up in town and goes on violent rampages. It's awesome. Hmm. And this game, like, it's so satisfying in so many ways to play this one dumb little mini game. Everything from, like, announcers just calling it like it's a sports match because this is a big TV show. To the fact that in the DLC that focuses around that game, like, they go on publicity tours to promote this hyper-violent reality death sport.
It sounds like you're really over the moon about this game, but am I remembering correctly that you weren't all that crazy about it at first?
It took me a little while to get going. A little bit.
Yeah.
But it's not... It didn't take a real long time. It's, you know, a couple hours. I think it starts out really slowly, as a lot of these games do, because it was forcing you to do a bunch of mission chapters in a row.
Right. I agree with that, and that's something that Saints Row 4 does a lot better.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it has to do at least one to start off, just to kind of introduce where they are in this world. But it did like three or four in rapid succession. But as it went on, I got to enjoy the missions more. Because...
Well, they're very fast-paced.
They are very fast-paced, and they're very focused around one character.
So they start where you are? I mean, like, you don't have to drive across the city, right?
You do, but driving across the city is not usually a big deal because after a certain point, you have aircraft.
Well, also, even when you're in a car, it has a far better navigation system than, than any GTA game. I mean, it has pop-up, like, holographic arrows.
It's kind of like, what's Microsoft's racing franchise?
Forza?
Yeah, it's kind of like the big arrows in Forza. But it's, the cars are also, well, I mean, there's different cars, but there's also really, really hyper-fast cars that just get you wherever you want to go. So by having the ability to basically summon vehicles at a whim and a nearly unlimited...
You know, cars that aren't even close to being realistic.
Oh, yeah.
That's the whole thing. That's, I think, one of the biggest strengths of the game is the fact that they aren't shackled by trying to be realistic.
This game don't give a fuck.
Yeah,
it doesn't.
I mean, it's so getting to places actually is... And unlike a lot of games, getting to places is actually fun. Like,
exactly.
I'll get distracted on my way across town and lose like an hour and a half just... causing a gang war.
Well, it's doing the burnout scoring system as you drive.
It is.
So it rewards you with XP and money just for driving on the wrong side of the road and having near misses and plowing through pedestrians and whatever.
And in fact, there's a whole chapter of the DLC based around driving Professor Genki's car around and murdering people for his amusement. And he's like, the game's just like, yes, go do that. It's fun. And you're like, yeah, you're right, it is. But I want to say that at the end of the game, I've actually max respected my character.
Wow.
Which isn't that really that difficult to do. But one of the things you can buy is effectively unlimited every ammo, instant reload time, and invincibility. So, I'll just walk around downtown, find a police car, and I'm like, sup? And then I'll just blow it up and just watch the entire military descend on me as I just superpower destroy everything.
Can you imagine GTA 4's story, basically, or just mainline game structure, including options to totally break it like that?
No, and it's...
They would never let you do that.
Like, one of the perks of getting maximum respect level, like, people are so impressed by you. Like, you have the ability to walk up and, like, say, like, people like, hey, nice to see you, or just make fun of them. And when you max out your respect, they're so in awe of you that when you do that, they burst into flames. So I'd be like, hey, good to see you. So I just walked through downtown doing that to people, and as they ran around, they set other people on fire.
Wow.
It was beautiful.
So, James, what did you think of the driving around town singing Sublime in the car?
I kind of did the same mental progression they did. So in the scene he's talking about, the main character and Pierce, who everybody hates Pierce, are in this car, and God, what's the name of that song?
The Santeria, I think.
Yeah, that's Sublime. And it comes on, and they both talk about how much they hate this song. Like, oh, this song's lame. And then after, like, half a minute, they're both singing it as loud as they can in a convertible driving through downtown. In unison. It's amazing. It's the stupidest, most amazing thing, because... They actually reprise that at the very end with all the characters singing it in the credits. And considering one of the characters is a giant burly Russian who sounds like a giant burly Russian from every movie, and one of them is a pimp who auto-tunes his own voice.
Yeah.
It's kind of unbelievable.
Yeah, so Saints Row 3 is absolutely bloody brilliant, and I feel exactly the same way about it. And that's why I was on board with Saints Row 4 from launch day. I actually like pre-purchased/preloaded this game a couple days before it came out on Steam. And I wanted to get it on PC because everybody says it runs way better than the console versions. And also they were having a 10% off pre-order sale. So I got it for $45. And I thought, I'm not getting another chance to buy this for $45 until at least Christmas. And I definitely don't want to wait that long.
Right.
And I got to play a quick demo of it at E3. It wasn't a great demo. It was just really out of context. But, you know, it involved me racing down the streets at super speed, plowing through cars and pedestrians in a 3D race, and then jumping up on top of buildings like Hulk Ultimate Destruction.
Yeah.
Because I live inside of a Matrix-style simulation, and I'm trying to break out by learning to hack the code, which translates into giving my character superpowers. And also, you're the president of the United States, and your vice president is Keith David.
Damn right he is.
Actor. So Saints Row 4 is, like, if anything, more insane than the previous game, and I am so about it, because I love me some Spider-Man 2 and some Hulk Ultimate Destruction and some Crackdown, and this game is... It's so weird. It jumped the whole franchise. It's like it jumped from one parallel path to the other, because you've got the sort of serious open world games and you've got the superhero open world games, and never the twain shall meet until now. And I'm a big fan. Actually, I'm a much more of a fan of the superhero style than I am the serious one. So I'm way into this. It's just a blast so far.
To give an impression for this game, one review I read pointed out that in co-op mode, when you play with somebody else, obviously you're president of the United States, but so are they. And the game's just like, fuck it, you're both president. Which is amazing. And it actively acknowledges that they're both president.
Oh, it's not just oblivious. It's like they actually wrote in jokes for the fact that now they're two presidents.
I think from how I read it, it just basically says, oh, you're both president. It's just like, yep, congratulations. Congratulations, Mr. Presidents. Wow.
That's awesome.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're crazy about Saints Row because it's just freaking hilarious, and it's so much fun. It's like they cut out all the bullshit that you hate about Grand Theft Auto, and they get you to the really fun, awesome parts way faster, and then they just kind of crank it up to 11 and make it even more stupid.
And yeah, and they just make fun of so many video game tropes as well.
Oh yeah, I mean, in 3, so there's great. A whole section that's basically a big Tron send-up with light cycles and... I mean, it's just it's an absolutely insane chapter.
Oh, in Saints Row 4, when you exit the simulation and you go into like the real world equivalent of like the Matrix, the ship that you're on is basically straight out of Mass Effect series, and you can run around and push X to romance your crew members, which in one case had Keith David reminding me that we have a professional relationship that we really should maintain. And in another case, caused Kinsey, the hacker girl, to punch my main character and then jump him and immediately have sex with him.
Nice.
In between giving me missions. So, yeah. I mean, I love this series. Let's move on to what John has been playing very quickly.
All right, very quickly. For Windows Phone 8, of all things, I actually picked up Halo Spartan Assault, which is an interesting little game that is very reminiscent. I was trying to think of games that I could compare this to. There's Pac-Man. An old Killzone PSP game, not Pac-Man. There's an old Killzone PSP game that it's a lot like, even though it's a bit faster paced, but it's more like Dead Nation on PS3. If anybody has played that, it's by Housemarque.
It's overhead perspective, right?
Correct. It's like kind of like an isometric view. And you know, you have like your little Spartan and you just kind of run him around and, you know, do all kinds of missions. Like you do escort missions and
Dude,
generally,
I got it. Ikari Warriors.
Kinda, yeah. It's kind of like that.
We talk about Killzone Liberation by chance?
Killzone Liberation, yep.
Okay.
Which is a very good game, very underrated. But yeah, so Spartan Assault runs really well on Windows Phone 8. I have like a Lumia 920, so it like, runs really, really well. It's fun. I mean, it's the best thing about it, I think, is it's perfect for a phone game in the sense that it does have some depth. Like there's a lot of achievements and all that kind of stuff that you can unlock, and there's weekly challenges. I think there's daily challenges. There's all kinds of stuff, leaderboards and all kinds of stuff like that. But the missions are very, very quick. And I think there's they just released a mission pack for it. But I think there's about 30 missions around there. And I mean, it takes you maybe a couple of minutes to play through them. And a lot of them are, you know, defend this area. And so, you know, you're fighting all kinds of Covenant forces and, you know, or, you know, find these three Marines and escort them to this area kind of thing. But they're all very, it's all very quick hit kind of stuff. So it's all really well done.
And you're okay using these touchscreen twin stick controls?
Yeah, they're actually, they're fairly precise. You know, they have, you know, you kind of have to watch because, you know, they're in the bottom left corner, the bottom right corner. And, but they actually do a pretty good job of approximating, you know, an actual joystick. They kind of handle it in some ways by having, you know, by having an arrow. Cause you can, I mean, you can do pretty much everything you can in a, you know, like a console Halo game. I mean, you can hop into one of the wraiths, into one of the tanks. You can hop into one of those. You can hop into the ghosts, the little, you know, light cycle kind of things. You can like hop in and out of those and, you know, fight, you know, use them to fight against enemy forces. And, but they kind of help you out by having a little arrow around that kind of, you know, circles around the vehicle to let you know, to give you a gauge of where you're actually pointing. So regardless of where you are on the touchscreen, you kind of know where it thinks you're pointing, which is very helpful. And it's very helpful with, like, you know, moving the tanks around within the environments and stuff. So I'd recommend it. I mean, pretty much it's probably the best game on Windows Phone 8. Of course, it's a Halo game, so the production values are really high. The music
but
is really good.
It's exclusive to Windows Phone 8,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah. Yep.
Or maybe, so. I think it's on Windows 8 also, maybe.
Oh, yeah, you're right. It's on Windows 8, so you can play it on tablet. It's, yeah. You can play it on either or, but...
yeah, so if you had a Surface, you could plug in a Xbox controller, I think.
Yep. Yeah, that was...
I don't know if you can do that with the RT, but you definitely can with the Pro.
Yeah, you can plug in, if you have a wired Xbox 360 controller, mm-hmm. They just added that support in the last update, which was actually just came out yesterday. So
nice.
Yeah, it's really good. I mean, it's a good little game. I mean, it's... I would say it's on par with pretty much any kind of game that you would get off of PSN or something like that.
Nice.
So it's really
okay.
Good. It's much better than just...
So much more like a console download release than a phone game.
Yes.
Because I kind of put those in sort of different categories in terms of expectations.
Yeah. Yep. So, yeah. So it's good. I would recommend it. Anybody out there that has a Windows Phone 8, I would definitely recommend it.
Insert joke nice. Here.
Yeah, exactly. All five.
Yeah. It's too easy.
Okay, so Guy, why don't we jump back to you real quick?
Sure. I've made more progress in Shin Megami Tensei 4. I'm really enjoying this game, but there are some things that really piss me off. So I'm going to start with the bad, just to leave a good impression after this new business. The game, like, for all the things that it does well and all the things that it's progressive about compared to, like, old RPGs, it's very, very obtuse in terms of navigation.
Yeah.
It's just maddening. Like, once you hit Tokyo...
Is it as bad as The World Ends With You?
I didn't get far in The World Ends With You, and that's one of the reasons. But yeah,
I was constantly lost in that city.
It's basically the same. Like, once you hit Tokyo... you enter the world map, and the way it works is that you've got these, you know, interest points that are highlighted, and you do see them in the bottom screen of the 3DS. Like, you can see a larger view of the map, and so you can use that to orient yourself a little bit. But your way is often blocked by buildings or by railroads or what have you, and a lot of times you're gonna have to go in, inside a field, like inside a cave or a town or a dungeon area, basically, to get across it and then emerge somewhere else in the world map. And, you know, like, the dungeons can be pretty damn convoluted. Like, you've got several heights, you know, like, you can be on the third or fourth floor of a structure. You can enter, like, vents and you'll emerge somewhere else. You can jump down structures and then you have to find another way back up. You know, like, they're very, very complex. So it's easy to think that, oh, okay, I think I missed an exit somewhere when you're lost, what to do next.
You know, I grew up on Final Fantasy dungeons, which are, you know, very similarly just
right,
very confusing. And even Phantasy Star dungeons, which are just horrible.
Right.
And I would say outside of Dragon Quest II, which did get pretty crazy towards the end,
mm-hmm.
I feel like the Dragon Quest series and also by extension, Ni No Kuni, have done a much better job in keeping dungeons simple and a little easier to grasp and just a lot shorter. So you kind of just get to the exciting stuff a lot faster.
Right.
And I didn't appreciate it much when I was a kid, but as I've gotten older, I appreciate that so much more.
Right. But the point I'm getting at, though, is not that the fields are necessarily too complex. It's just like I'm just explaining how it can seem that way when you're lost. And the reason why you're not progressing can be something else entirely, and that something else is bad design. Very early on in Tokyo, you've got a quest, like you meet a demon on the world map who says, "Hey, I can get you to cross this river. Just do this thing for me. Just kill this guy." So, okay, sure. Next time I see this guy, I'll kill him and I'll cross the river. I search everywhere. I could not find the guy. And I looked at a fac and I had been at the spot where he's supposed to be. He wasn't showing up. Why? Because in the very first town that I got into, I talked to some, like, the towns are very, very small. And, like, you can, you know, like, usually NPCs don't really tell you much of anything. But this guy, I could, like, he actually asks me, like, "Hey, where are you guys from?" And you can choose not to tell him where you're from. Which is the choice I made. Because, you know, like, I just arrived in Tokyo from the fucking ceiling that appeared over Tokyo. You know, like, I'm from heaven, basically. And, you know, all these people don't know me. They think I've got a strange accent. I think it makes sense to say, "No, I'm not going to tell you where I'm from." Well, when you say no, I'm sorry, but that demon won't appear.
Well, you shouldn't have been an asshole.
That's really stupid.
So that's one thing that happened. Another thing that happened was that at some point I'm in a secondary quest. Like, I'm in a freaking side quest. And I reach a certain part and it says, like, "Oh, maybe you don't want to go on while you're in this quest." So I'm like, okay, I'm just gonna run around, like, all the areas that I've already been to, and I'm gonna finish this quest, and then I'm gonna move on. And I do that, and I go inside the fields, you know, I try, like, I'm sure that I missed something somewhere. Eventually, I just give up, and I get past this wall, this literal wall of fire, and then I complete some main quest, thing very quickly after that. And, like, two doors down was, like, the objective of this second quest that I gave up. It's like, it was past this wall that they blocked me with.
Oh, this sounds like a mess.
It is. I don't understand it. Like, how can... Was this not playtested? And I thought that Atlus was supposed to have some sort of, you know, experience making RPGs. So I don't understand it.
But clearly you're still enjoying it overall. So what are some of the good things that are making up for this very confusing design?
The stuff with the demons is still as fun as ever. Like, it's just fun, like, talking to them and seeing the weird things that they'll say, or the, you know, like, they're pretty funny usually. And the designs don't repeat. There's something like over 300, and it's like Pokemon. Like, there's no color swap here. Like, it's
but
just
the Pokemon talk to you.
Yeah, but they don't, they won't have, like, 300 different, like, dialects or anything. Like, they're still gonna always say the same kind of things, you know?
Oh, but the dialogue's not personalized to each character.
No. But the designs are, and they're pretty cool to look at, except when they're incredibly filthy. And that, so I've got, like, an incubus in my party.
Oh,
and
yes,
that thing
the boob
has
demon.
Yeah, no, like, that, it's got a phallus the size of its height, basically.
What?
Yeah.
I'm not going to go into the depths of Japanese iconography, but yes, that's...
Yeah, and the phallus has little hearts on it.
I can see it. No, I'm there.
What's the descriptor in the ESRB rating for this game?
I'm pretty sure it's mature. It has to be.
No, but I mean, the descriptor is like, what...
Well, like, you can, like, type, if you're feeling adventurous, just Google, like, penis chariot, and you're going to see a very famous demon from Shin Megami Tensei.
I got to tell you, dude, I am not about to Google penis chariot. I'm going to pass on that one, dude. Thanks.
I'm gonna wait till I'm at work tomorrow before
content descriptors, blood, language, partial nudity, sexual themes, violence.
Yeah. So, of course, I'm street passing the incubus. Just to mess with people. And, but I'm just wondering, you know, like, awesome. I am, j- I'm sure
poisoning the youth.
I'm sure that in Japan, like it's well, I'm sure no kid is playing this. I'm sure that in Japan, like it's very easy. Like people look over your shoulder in the subway, like they're seeing you play this game, and you just turn to them and say like Shin Megami Tensei, and they're like, oh, okay. But here, it's a little bit. There's a little bit more explanation to be done. So I haven't really been playing the game in public.
Yeah, all right, I'm all sure right, no here, underage child is playing this game that can be purchased online with zero adults between you
and the... An excerpt from the ESRB rating.
Yes?
During the course of the game, some female demons wear outfits that expose their breasts or buttocks. Other demons have phallic-shaped heads or torsos. Descriptions of demons sometimes include sexual references, quote, it ravishes women while they sleep, impregnating them, and, quote, they visit sleeping men and have sexual intercourse with them.
Oh my god.
Yep, that's, the words, that's my
quote,
incubus.
SH asterisk T and A asterisk SHOLE appear in the dialogue.
I mean, I've still got a couple days to get in on that $30 rebate deal, right?
No, this is the last day. It's too late for listeners.
Okay, let's hurry up and finish the segment.
Yeah, right. There you go.
I gotta buy it right now.
I'm in the same place, Mets.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm just flabbergasted now. I'm gonna wrap up the segment by talking very, very briefly about Dive Kick. It came out on PSN last week for Vita and PS3, and it was really cheap on because with Plus, you know, I got it for really cheap. And I've been kind of looking forward to it. This is just it's a really insanely simplified fighting game. You jump with one button and you kick with the other, and there's no D-pad or anything. I can play it with my Blu-ray Bluetooth remote. I don't even need a real controller to play this game. It's so simple. And yet, it's really competitive, it's really challenging, it's interesting, it has all these different characters, and they have special moves, and there's a lot of strategy to it. And I played this over and over at E3 this year, it's so much fun, it's just, you immediately pick it up, and you immediately have fun with it. It's really kind of an ideal E3 game. As for home usage, you know, so far I've been playing it by myself, and it's not that great, you know, playing, it's basically the arcade mode in Street Fighter. It's just not very good, even though the mechanics are clearly very fun. It's not structured in a way that's very engaging. But I'm going to have some friends over this weekend coming into town, and I'm going to show this to them. And I feel like, just like Smash Brothers, although even more so in this case, this is a fighting game that we can all play. And I think, although there certainly is some skill to it, I don't have that skill. So we're going to be on equal footing right off the bat, and it takes about 1 second to explain to them how to play it. And I think we're going to have so much fun with it this weekend. So it kind of made me think of Smash Brothers being in that way, you know, because that game was revolutionary in that it basically was a fighting game where they took out all the combos that you had to do, all the, you know, the crazy joystick motions and combinations and charging and stuff like that. And they standardized the inputs across all the characters and just made the moves different. And it made it so much easier to play and so much easier to play with a lot of different characters, which is kind of the whole point of the game. It's this big nostalgia fest. And I feel like Dive Kick really takes that idea and just pushes it to the next level, at least to the next level of simplicity. You may not prefer it, but I think it certainly does work. I think it's a lot of fun. There's a certain depth to Smash Brothers, a certain variety in what happens that I appreciate. It's not like every single character has exactly the same jump kick, which is literally true in Dive Kick.
So which characters are the biggest racist stereotypes? Is it Dive Kicks or Punch Outs?
Dive Kick is pretty over the top, but of course, it's satirizing Street Fighter 2 and probably Punch Out as well, even. But a lot of fighting games have really bad racial stereotypes, and so Dive Kick is pushing it way over the top because they're making fun of it and they're sort of criticizing that aspect of the fighting game genre. So, I mean, it's parody, you know, it's hard to be offended by parody because it's trying to make you realize that the real world is just as bad. Serious talk. Okay, let's take a break. And when we come back, we've got your listener mail, which includes, of course, the big news topics of the week. And I know we're really chomping at the bit to get to that stuff.
Let's go!
Here's a quick look at the best original content at our website, now playing at NintendoWorldReport.com.
First up this week, we have a review for LEGO Legends of Chima Laval's Journey for the 3DS by Zach Kaplan. What the hell is LEGO Legends? What the hell is LEGO Legends? Legends.
LEGO Legends.
I hate you, James. What the hell is LEGO Legends of Chima? You play as a lion? Get out, LEGO. I don't need this. Zach seems to think it's okay, but whatever. I don't need you. Wow. We also have impressions for BitBoy Arcade by Don Koopman. B-Plus's latest adventure on 3DS has been in Don's hands and learned how to play 3DS games, courtesy of B-Plus.
For a feature, we have Missed Opportunities, KK Slider, and Wii Wheel by Nicholas Bray. I thought vainly that this was going to be about KK Slider Racing or Folk Hero Tambourine Edition. Or more hauntingly, Nick really wanted to shoot the dog. Sadly, these are two discrete ideas, but they're just as insane. Nick wants KK Slider on the pop charts.
No.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Alright, and we have another feature, Splinter Cell Blacklist on Wii U, the true OPAST by Special Agent Justin Baker. Agent Baker is lurking in the shadows, serving up quiet death to other console versions with his secret tech, the Wii U gamepad, a device 95% of the population has never heard of.
Just like the NSA.
We have the Nintendo 2DS Roundtable. Oh god, Nintendo done just... Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. But, oh god, yeah. Nintendo just...
Another Legends of LEGO.
Oh god, Nintendo done just gone crazy. How the... Fuck you. How the NWR staff taking the breaks? Did I say that correctly at all? And we have a review. Smash Bowling 3D on the 3DS eShop by Becky Yolanda. Big John Games brings us the next entry in the Smash franchise, Smash Bowling 3D. That's actually a lie. It's a mediocre bowling game.
Lastly this week, we have impressions. Pocket Monsters X and Y by Danny Bivens. OMG. Did I get to play the new Pokemon X and Y at the Pokemon Game Show, a public convention just for Pokemon.
How much do you hate him now?
Oh, you hate him so much. So much. It was such an in-demand experience that they derived a gatekeeping system to keep people from playing it twice. So after all that pretext, you probably expect me to tell you what he thought, but I won't. Go read it.
Well, you can go read Danny's Pokemon X and Y impressions along with all this other great stuff over at NintendoWorldReport.com. Welcome back, everyone. It is time for listener mail, and we're kind of rolling that in with the news here this week. I believe Mr. Vayette has the first email this week.
Hey, Einstein writes, Dear RFN crew, the design of the 2DS has got me quite confused. Hopefully you can clear this up for me. Do you think the intended message of the design is that compared to with tablets, the DS lineup is toast? Or that the 2DS is the best thing since sliced bread? Keep up the good work, gentlemen.
So, context, let's...
Slow clap.
Since we haven't contexted
those jokes.
This email at all. So, if you don't read news sites, which you should...
Oh, come on. Everybody knows about the
2DS. Well, look, it's worth mentioning, just to give a quick reference.
Be quick, then.
The Nintendo has announced a iteration of the 3DS that removes 2D, hence the 3D, hence the 2DS name, and is unfoldable. So, since the two screens are on top of each other, and it's basically held like a vertical slate.
But screen aside, it is a 3DS.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It has all the features of a 3DS right down to the street pass and the accelerometer.
Yep, and
it plays all 3DS games and all
DS games as well.
Yes. And it has a sleep button so you can put it to sleep.
That's right.
That's right. It'll do street pass, everything.
Yep.
It comes with face raiders.
Which is going to be super awkward holding that
thing. And they're still going with that name.
Kind of weird on the playground, but we'll see.
Yeah.
But, so, obviously the target... I don't think that the message here is either of the above. I think the message here is that Nintendo said, oh, hey, we could produce this console a lot cheaper if we cut things like the clamshell design and the 3D functionality.
Mm-hmm.
And we could take a much bigger... We could sell it for cheaper while still getting a higher profit margin per unit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's important to note that they're not trying to tell anybody that this is the best version of 3DS.
No, in fact, they're not...
they're almost kind of saying the opposite.
No, they are.
This is clearly not... The one, like, if you actually care and, like, if you are a serious gamer, you really don't want this. This is something that you would buy for someone else, is kind of how it's being
arranged. The deluxe version of the 3DS already came out. It was the XL, so now they went the other way, and they went for the low end.
And eventually they'll go back to the other extreme and do a new, even more premium version.
And coincidentally, it's being released on the same day as Pokemon XY.
Hey,
imagine that.
Moffitt assures us that's just coincidence.
Yes, that's right. They have
that was the dumbest denial I've ever seen in an interview.
I know. It's like, it's just coincidental. Really?
Are we really going to judge you harshly for releasing a 3DS version that's cheaper and built startlingly for children on the same day Pokemon comes out?
But it's like, why would you even deny that? Like, why would you
even... They don't want to be seen as, like, you know, being... opportunistic. I mean, this is a company that sells expensive plastic to babies.
Yeah.
Pokemon
is opportunistic in the extreme.
Oh, it is. It was the dumbest denial. But
yeah,
yes.
I understand it.
The target audience.
They've mastered the art of creating addictive children's games.
Yes. And
they will sell you two for different versions of it.
Yeah.
Come on.
And no, they will sell you 2 to 4 different versions of it.
Yes.
The target audience here obviously is not people listening to the show. It's people who would never have bought a 3DS, or children of parents who would never have bought them a 3DS.
Well, that's the thing, it's probably also, you know, kids that already have a DS and they've probably wanted a 3DS for so long, and their parents have always put it off because it's too expensive, and so now they're like, well, you know, we can get this one. It's more geared towards, you know, you throwing it against a wall. And it's just
genius.
And it gets past the paranoia of, oh god, little Bobby could turn on 3D and go blind.
Exactly.
Hell, the price is really paranoia a big factor for word. Parents, because my sister recently bought my niece a DSi, a freaking DSi. She went to the store and she chose the DSi just because of the price.
Yep.
Well, and the tricky part here is that really that $99 price point is where the magic happens. But this
this is clearly the next step on that path.
Yeah. Like, so Christmas time, think this thing drops to $99?
No, next Christmas.
Next Christmas. So my gut feeling on this device is that it probably has a bigger margin than the 3DS does. Mm-hmm. It's not just cheaper; they make more per unit, and for them, this is obviously a no-brainer. I mean, it's worth the incremental costs of having a third production line running just to make this happen.
Yeah.
And I kind of think it's a smart idea. I mean, even though the average gamer looks at it and goes, what the fuck, man?
Well, actually, you think about it, James, they're probably making this on some of the old production lines for the original 3DS, because I bet you they have really slowed down production.
Probably, but they're still having to source 3 sets of parts.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. I mean, they certainly still are making it, and people still are buying it, but it's slowed down drastically compared to the XL.
Yeah,
it's going to slow down even more once the 2DS comes out.
I don't think they up their manufacturing capacity. I think they just have to source new lines. They probably just source the actual workmanship from somewhere else.
Yeah, I think the original 3DS eventually goes away just because it is kind of an unnecessary in-between halfway measure between the 2DS and the XL.
I wouldn't think the XL price would have to come down first, though.
Oh, yeah, but it will over time.
Yeah.
It's already, to me, $200 for the XL is already a great deal, because it's a really fantastic piece of hardware.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just think they would want something in that middle ground before they drop the 3DS.
Yeah. It'll stick around for a little while. But anyway, I mean, do any of us like really hate the thing, or hate the design of it, or hate the idea of it?
I think it's super nuts looking, but you know, reading it, people who have actually got a chance to play it, they're all quite strong that it's comfortable to hold. In some cases, saying it's more comfortable to hold.
It kind of takes me back to the GBA SP, where it felt like, even though it was a lot smaller and it seemed like your hands were more cramped, there was a little more verticality to it and a little more room to kind of rest your palms of your hands up against something. Whereas if you compare that to the original GBA, it just kind of hung out at the tips of your fingers.
Yeah.
It was really kind of uncomfortable to hold if you have adult-sized hands.
Yeah. Mm.
But this is way extreme beyond that, because there's nothing but vertical space.
Yep. It's like a Duke.
Yeah, I kind of really want to hold one just to kind of get mentally make sense of it in my head, because it kind of looks like an axe head. It's very thin at the bottom and quite thick at the top.
Yeah,
and it's I could see why that ergonomics works. It's not totally dissimilar from the operating design behind the gamepad, where there's that big ridge at the top to kind of give you some bulk where your hand sits.
Exactly.
Also, if you put it down flat on a table or something, you would still have it. It wouldn't be flat down. It would still be raised a little bit, so you could still play it.
Yeah, that's true.
That's smart.
Yeah. I would. You know, I'm kind of tempted on this thing.
I'm totally tempted on it.
But not as a replacement for my 3DS, which is an original. I don't have any issue with it. It's
exactly a supplement.
See, to me, though, I wouldn't be buying a US one. I'd be waiting for the eventual Japanese release.
Yeah.
Which they haven't announced anything about yet.
But see,
because of the region locking, then you could play Japanese games.
Exactly. Especially if I get the eShop to work in the US.
But yeah. when you download a game, it's locked to that. To the 2DS,
right?
Locked to the
so that 3DS. Would be his Japanese system.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes. Yep.
It'd be dedicated to that.
You know, I'm not planning on buying one, but the 2DS makes sense for a certain type of game that's available on the eShop that uses the D-pad a lot and that doesn't use 2D whatsoever. That's
DSiWare.
The virtual console.
Oh.
Yep.
DSiWare. No. The Notebook Game Boy games and ES games, and I kind of hope that Nintendo sees this opportunity maybe and you know ramps up the releases a little bit. That would be nice.
That would be amazing, but I feel like the virtual console service just is not something they really keep in mind when they design hardware.
No.
I wish it was. I would love for that to be kind of more catered to in terms of ergonomics and things like that, but outside of things that are really focused on it, like the classic controller.
Right.
You know, but the system itself, I don't really see that.
Yeah, because that's the first thing that came to mind when I saw it, other than, wow, that's a dumb name. Is this a joke? It's just like, Johnny, when you talked about like some sort of cheap toy handheld, basically like a cheap Game Boy that you could play Game Boy games on, that was like a year ago. But like this is kind of a step towards that. Like this is, you know, like 2D and cheap enough and... I don't know. Like, it could be a very good virtual console machine.
Agreed.
Yeah, I was just trying to think if some of the... these were hinged. I was looking at the dual-screen Game & Watches.
Mm. They were all
hinged.
They
might have... Yes. Yeah. There were a lot of different versions of them, and a lot of times the hardware would be sort of unique from one to the other, and I was thinking there was at least one of them that was kind of just this plaque that had
so
two screens.
So all of mine are hinged. There's a Mickey Mouse one that I used to have that I can't find that's super rare that has two screens, but it's mounted in a super weird way. It doesn't clamshell, but like one screen raises over the other. It's weird. It like reflects off a mirror. It's super strange.
Yeah.
I just, the name is so unfortunate, but I guess Nintendo painted themselves in the corner with a 3DS.
You know, I kind of like how cheeky the name is. Like, it's
a joke that totally doesn't jive with the actual target audience. I think that maybe that's why a lot of people, when they first heard about it, were kind of annoyed that it didn't seem to really be catered to them, because the name is catered to them. And when you hear it, someone tells you, dude, they're totally releasing something called a 2DS. You think, that's such a dumb name. It must be for the adults who would actually kind of get the joke. And then you go look at it, and it's totally not for you.
How dumb do you think kids are? I think kids understand and get the joke.
It's just – but it's a joke about how poorly their systems are named.
Here's the thing, though. You assume that it is a joke. Maybe they're just totally unaware.
Well, okay, that's how I choose to enjoy it.
That's fine. I mean, I kind of enjoy the almost whimsical nature of calling it a 2DS.
As I said,
it works on a few different levels, not including the fact it is an inferior version of the 3DS.
Yep.
It's like a four-level pun. It's beautiful.
As I've said on the roundtable, I want the form factor of a 2DS with a 3DS screen and just have it be like the 2DS 3D.
Wow, so you're that big of a fan of the form factor.
No, I just want that.
You want
to
the
exist.
Irony. He's a fan of the irony.
Yes.
Oh, I see. You know, for me, I was thinking, again, like James, I would be interested in buying one of these, but certainly not to replace my XL, but just as a kind of a side system. It'd be really a luxury item to own two 3DSs.
Oh, it would be. You would have bought three of them at this point.
Well, true, but yeah.
Yeah, one,
yeah,
I won,
you're
one
right,
got lost.
Because I lost one, which is, you know, that's on me probably. But anyway, I think I would like to have it just to kind of play 3DS card-based games, which I still have a few that I'm eventually, like Tales of the Abyss, which I would like to finish at some point. Theatrhythm, which I could definitely play a lot more of. But like, it's like, with all the eShop stuff that my 3DS XL is so loaded up with now, I hardly ever play those card-based games. Yeah. And I feel like this system would, like, dedicating those games to this system would actually make it more likely that I might actually play through them. And I think it would be kind of a nice to play all your legacy DS games are on. But the thing that concerns me there is I remember how poorly they handled DS screen displays on the original 3DS. And those screens are the same size as the ones on 2DS. So unless they've kind of fixed the, you know, it's not really emulation, but the DS mode, unless they've sort of tweaked that on the graphics processor.
Probably not.
It's probably not going to look that great on the 2DS, unfortunately. Because I think that would be a great sort of bonus usage of it, is to play a lot of your old DS games.
You know, I actually pulled out a couple DS games. I went through Old Game Weekend this week. And,
nice.
I actually pulled out a couple DS games, preliminarily Ghost Trick. You know, it's not as bad as it was in my memory, the DS mode. It's not great. It's not ideal, but it's not as terrible as I remember it being.
I think it's okay. It's not good, but okay.
I think in my head it's just become the worst thing ever.
A lot of people will not play.
Well, and that's why I still have a DSi XL. I just throw it in there, I'm good to go. But
look, you are one of the few in the proud on the DSi XL.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't have a system that nice to play the
DS
games.
Well, everyone should have bought a DSi XL, because it's amazing. It is. It's amazing. It's an amazing piece of hardware.
I know you're a big fan. It's goofy as hell, but I mean, the fact that you like the design of that thing says a lot to me about why you like the 2DS, because I think they're sort of similarly industrial looking and kind of goofy. And, you know, just lots of plastic, really big, very easy to grasp in your hands because it's so big. Which I don't think that – to me, the 3DS XL is a lot more elegant. It's not nearly as kind of hulking and you know, purely functional as
like,
the DSi
like
XL.
To me, the little design cues they put on the 3DS XL I actually didn't like the sandwich cookie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to me, I'm like, that's dumb. Just make it a solid color. Stop it.
Yeah.
Stop it right now. And they never have given me my solid color 3DS XL, so they won't get my money.
Wow.
But
harsh, James.
But if they were to give me, I mean, I really am kind of trying to figure out what the prospects for buying eShop games are from the Japanese eShop in the US, because to me it makes a ton of sense.
Well, I mean, Don Koopman does it just fine from Europe.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't know, but I don't know what hurdles he has to go through to make that happen.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it's too bad.
So, yeah, I mean, to me, this is an obvious answer, especially if a lot of the cartridge games go up on the eShop.
Yeah, that's a very smart... And they are in Japan. They've been doing pretty well about it. You could be playing Bravely Default right now.
Yeah, it would be a big boost to me personally in my ability to play foreign games without having to shell out for a 3DS XL Japan.
Right, which is probably close to $300 after you import it and everything.
I think the fact they haven't announced the Japanese launch for this is also a big tell, because it doesn't really need it in Japan. It's still selling a ton of units.
Right. I don't think it's a big tell. I think it's just that it's going to be later. You know, I've read a lot of articles that sort of surmise that this thing was specifically designed for the West, and I think they're just sort of assuming that because it's not coming out in Japan.
No,
I doubt Nintendo told them that.
I think what it says more is it tells you how they're positioning the device.
Sure.
I think that alongside its launch alongside Pokemon XY really tells you who the target market is.
Mm-hmm.
And Nintendo's own executives have said this to people who would listen. And not all of them have, but they're basically saying, look, this is for... Not for you, it's for your kid.
It's for little kids.
Yeah.
It's for your child, not for you.
It's for the parents of little kids that basically just want something as cheap as possible to shut their kid up.
Right, yeah.
And it's weird, because I do feel like in the past, Nintendo has occasionally released versions of their systems that are meant for a different age group, even though that seems a little odd. But I feel like when they redesigned...
Oh, like the Pikachu N64, for God's sake.
Yeah, that's a great example. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you've got like the redesigned NES and Super NES. To me, that was partially about manufacturing costs, but if you look at the design of those and the functionality of them, they're much easier to use, but they're nice and clean and they have no moving parts and they'll last forever. They're clearly going to be collector's items because they will last forever. And I think Nintendo knew that by the mid-90s when they released that stuff. I think those systems were really targeted towards grown-ups, adult gamers, people who'd already been around those systems for a long time and wanted to get a new one that actually worked and would work forever. So to me, this isn't that inconsistent. The only unusual thing is here, in the case of 3DS, they released the grown-up version first and the kid version later.
Yeah.
I guess it's a little more like the Pikachu N64.
Which was very, very late. And we'd already gone through all, like, the designer color N64s at that point, too.
Right.
Which were
the clear ones.
Which were targeted towards much more image conscious, like an adult.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, like, you know, high schoolers, college dorm.
Yeah.
You know, you want
oh, shit,
really
son,
cool
you got the transparent lime green? Oh, damn!
With the Donkey Kong banana controller.
Oh, my God.
I hate you, man.
Play it loud.
Yeah. All right. So why don't we move on? I'm sure 2DS will come back around. It is an oddity.
I'm so thrilled.
But it's been such a fun news story to
The best part of that was seeing the West Coast journalists wake up in the morning and go, "What the fuck?"
Exactly. Yeah. Well, do you notice? Actually, I do want to bring this up. I thought it was pretty interesting that Nintendo announced this not with a Nintendo Direct, as they have everything else, including their E3 press conference.
Yep.
But they went through the traditional media channels. They invited people over to check it out. They had hands-on impressions that were embargoed. They announced it through press releases. And
well, it was announced at the GameStop Managers Convention, was it not?
That's yeah, what it was announced. I heard that.
So they announced it directly to
retail.
And I think
what's
that was
amazing is how good they did keeping it quiet.
Yeah, well, I think part of it too is
it's an announcement that was specifically targeted just for retailers, because they were inviting, you know, there were interviews with Reggie and Scott Moffitt. So I mean, they were clearly entertaining it also as a media event. I just think it's fascinating that they did not do it in a fan-centric way, which has been their MO for the past year and a half with Nintendo Direct.
Well, I think that probably GameStop was like, hey, you know, we know that 3DS is, you know, selling like crazy in Japan, but it's not doing as well over here in the U.S. Is there anything that you can do to help us out here, Nintendo?
I don't think GameStop commissioned this device.
Oh, I don't think they commissioned it, but I'm sure they had input into saying, hey, you know, we think that maybe this thing isn't selling as well to kids as it might be. I mean, you know, Nintendo talks to their retail partners, so.
No, I don't think they need to, though. I mean, they've got Club Nintendo and a lot of other market research. I think Nintendo.
Well, market research is in the numbers in the U.S. I mean, this is targeted at the U.S. So,
right.
And the 3DS has not been selling as well in the U.S. as it has in Japan.
I think its debut is targeted from a marketing standpoint at the U.S. But again, I think this was developed with a worldwide audience in mind, and it will come out in Japan probably next year. They probably just want to, you know, fill up the shelves this holiday season and things. To me, it seems like a lot of times hardware in Japan launches in the winter or the spring.
Yeah,
that seems to be when they can count on people to, you know, shell out the big bucks. Whereas for us, it's more in the late fall.
Yeah, they just don't need it in Japan right now.
No, they don't need it, and they can afford to wait. But it'll come out, and James's master plan will work out, which I think is very clever. And you know, if they're depending on how this localization stuff with NOA goes, I might jump in on that with you.
Yeah,
we'll see. I don't want to be waiting 4 years for every big RPG that I want to play that comes out on 3DS.
Well, especially stuff that's basically playable in Japanese as it is. It doesn't come out here.
Right.
Like, you ever wanted to try a Denshu Digo game? Well, now you can.
But I didn't.
But you should. All right. But you should. And now you can with no risk.
So let's move on to the next letter in the next big news topic, and James is going to read that one.
Okay. Eric writes, I used to think that people calling for a new Wii U bundle without the gamepad were crazy. But after seeing the reveal of the 2DS, I'm not so sure. If the Wii U still sells abysmally through the holidays, I could see Nintendo trying out something similar. How inconceivable would this really be? Release a version of the system without the gamepad, sell it for $200, and just a Pro Controller, and maybe a Wii Remote Plus. Patch all existing games and software to work with any Wii U-compatible controller. Then start selling the gamepad separately with a Nintendo LAN pack-in. Maybe certain software going forward might have to have, quote, requires the gamepad on the box. In the past, I would have thought that dropping the gamepad was nuts. That is the whole point of the Wii U. But after seeing Nintendo's offerings at E3, I'm not sure why they believe in the thing. Comparatively, the 3DS is selling like gangbusters versus the Wii U, and Nintendo dropped the biggest feature to make it cheaper. And if you really want to be able to hook your horn in the Mario Kart...
Honk, honk.
It's hard to read!
I understand, but it's
not... It's really
hook.
Long!
Hook means something different.
I'm leaving it in there. And if you really want to be able to honk your horn in Mario Kart, you could still buy the gamepad separately, or buy the more expensive deluxe set that still comes with the gamepad packed in. Do these desperate times call for such desperate measures?
I don't think that the Wii U is going to sell poorly throughout the holidays. I think it's after the holidays that it's in trouble.
Yeah, January, February, they're screwed. Because they're pushing everything into... So, I mean, it's going to be at least 3 or 4 months, most likely, until Mario Kart. And I guarantee you, between Christmas and then, almost nothing coming out. Because they're moving everything around to try to jam in this holiday season. Even though I'd say the lineup isn't really quite deserving of that much push, it's going to get it because that's what they've got.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. See, I just think dropping the gamepad... see, here's the... Let me draw a line between what dropping the gamepad and dropping the 3DS would be. Drop the 3D from 3DS. While it may be the feature for which the system is named, the most defining feature of the 3DS is that it is a more powerful DS.
Yeah.
I mean...
And a really good analog would be if they sold a cheaper Wii U that didn't do off-screen play, even though it still had the same controller.
Right.
So what that would mean is a very popular, useful feature would no longer be available, but they wouldn't have to rewrite the UI or any of the games to make it compatible.
Right. And, of course, that wouldn't make sense, obviously, because it doesn't...
But that's basically what they're doing with
3DS. Right. Right. There's no clean analog no clean, feasible analog. I think dropping the gamepad effectively just makes this thing a more powerful Wii, but without any kind of sales line.
It's like losing the circle pad. It fundamentally changes how you're going to play a lot of games, and a lot of games won't even work, so they're going to have to be patched.
And I can't imagine that companies are going to bother. They're just going to say, all right, we can't even believe what comes in the box anymore. We're out even more than we were before.
So then you're invalidating a whole bunch of games in the library on this new version of the hardware, which just Nintendo would never do.
Hell, they're not even adding another circle pad to the 3DS. And, you know, like, it's not...
The 2DS.
It's too much trouble.
They stick to their guns.
Yeah.
On controls, they really do stick to their guns.
Yeah, I mean, putting a second circle pad on the basic bare-bones model would be completely counterintuitive, though.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that model exists to be a more streamlined version of existing models, not one that has more stuff.
Right.
But I think fundamentally taking the gamepad out would undercut them worse than leaving it in and charging $300. And I don't know that they could conceivably get to $200 by just cutting the gamepad. I don't know if that's $100 worth of technology.
Maybe they need to re-engineer the gamepad just like they do with their handhelds all the time to make it better and cheaper to make.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll happen over time.
After a couple years on the market, it's probably feasible that they could do, you know, the gamepad XL, or not the XL, but like the gamepad EX. You know, it's this new and improved version. It comes with all new systems, and if you already have one, you can buy the new gamepad. And it's just, you know, they probably make even more profit on it because the materials have come down through mass economy of scale, but they can improve the quality of it and everybody wants it, you know. I mean, they could certainly do that, and then they can have a lot more margin on getting the whole system bundled down later on when they need it.
Yeah, I mean, I think Nintendo's probably already come up with mechanisms for making production of the Wii U cheaper, including the gamepad. I think that all just, like Don says, that'll happen somewhat naturally.
I don't think they've sold through all the gamepads that they made in the first place.
Yeah.
So any improvements they've worked on, you probably haven't seen them yet.
I'm not so sure. I mean, I'll be curious if there's a sharp take up. Well, shit. John.
Yeah.
They have a Wii U coming out that has Wind Waker bundled in digitally, albeit.
Mm-hmm.
For $299.
Yep.
It is the premium model of the Wii U.
Yep.
Is that enough for you to bite?
You know, I've been thinking about it. I don't know. See, I wish they would have left Nintendo Land in there, really.
Wow. You'd rather have that than...
I'm saying additionally. I would rather have Nintendo Land than anything.
Don't worry. You can get a copy of Nintendo Land for like $5.
Yeah, but I don't want to buy it.
It's like buying a copy of Wii Sports. It's so cheap.
Have they confirmed it's not in there?
I'm pretty sure it's not in there.
Oh, I'm surprised. I would think they would have just given a digital code for it.
There's so many copies of it out on the market, on the second hand market.
Yeah, I know. That's why I figured
if you really want one,
see,
it costs you almost nothing.
See, here's my problem with this bundle. It's the fact that it's a GameStop exclusive bundle, which means I have to pay tax on it, which takes the price up to about $330, which kind of pisses me off because I'd rather spend that money on a game rather than just paying taxes.
So if it was on Amazon or, you know, Best Buy website or whatever, you could get away with it?
Yeah, I mean, if it was on Amazon, I wouldn't pay any taxes and I would have it already pre-ordered. But on GameStop, I was like, $30? Yeah, I don't know.
So we're down to the point where you're $30 away from buying a Wii U.
Yeah.
Like, that's the value deficit.
At the price point. The price is right for him. It's tax that kills him.
Yeah, that's the thing. The price is right. I don't like the fact that it's a GameStop exclusive.
Order from Delaware. Done.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's close. It's close, though. Like, for a second,
any listeners in Delaware, call up John Lindemann.
For a second, I was like, I almost pre-ordered it. Almost. I was that close. And then I was like, ah. Because I have other stuff that I can spend $300 on, believe me. Other more very important stuff. But that said, $300 with a game like that, that package is good. Now, you know, I must say the themed hardware is sweet, because I missed out on the 3DS hardware with the similar accents, Zelda, yeah, which I loved. Right. I would have loved to have had that 3DS.
It does look really cool. I mean, in sort of the cheesy way.
It's kind of like a tribal tattoo.
In the cheesy way that these things look. It's
I don't have a Wii U, so I mean, it's a bonus for me, you know?
Right. I mean, it's... Right. Let me be clear. It's not a great looking thing, but in the cheesy way they do these, it's kind of cool.
Yeah, and see, the thing
I'm sure it's done well.
The thing is, too, for me, I already have Hyrule Historia. So that's really not that big of a selling point for me.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that's actually, you know, depending on the presentation and how good of a job they do with that, integrating it into, I guess it's in the game, or maybe it's like a channel on the home screen. But, you know, if that's not just a link to the website where they've kind of scanned in pages of it and they're all kind of crooked, if they actually do a nice job with it, that's a really sweet thing, especially since
the Historia itself was a limited...
It was a limited edition, so a lot of people probably don't have it.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Really, I mean, they obviously produced it digitally to begin with. I mean, because you have to.
Yeah, that's how it's
done.
Yeah,
but do you have an interface that actually...
No, but the point is that it's not scanned. It's the digital file.
It's gonna look sharper than it does when you look at it on the page, probably.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, but I think that's a really sweet addition, you know, depending on how they execute on it.
I'm interested in this... In this digital copy of games bundle philosophy that they're putting forth, I'm kind of curious why they're even bothering to sell the Wii. Besides the fact they've got hardware units left, why don't they just dump the whole thing? Just say, we're only going to sell the Wii U with a game, and it's going to be a digital game. And that gets people in the eShop.
Mm-hmm. Well, that may be what they're doing. We're not sure, because there's still enough. I mean, it's Wii U selling so slowly. That there's still a lot of hardware that's just on shelves that's been there for a long time. Mm-hmm. So they can't announce something like a huge turnover in the way that they bundle these games going forward. And they can't discontinue the basic version while there's this many still sitting on the shelf. So they have to convince people to do it. Yeah. Now, to me, the way to do that is you also do a price drop on the basic. But I think they're sort of going to let that happen by de facto,
mm-hmm. Right?
Rather than announce
let,
it.
Let but publishers I feel like those, just opt to, or let retailers just opt to sell it for
yeah,
less.
Yeah, just basically.
You have to imagine those are going to be going for $250 this Christmas.
Yeah,
if not before.
Yeah,
maybe even sooner.
See, but that's the thing. That's what I'm kind of waiting on. I'm waiting to see what's going to happen with these 300 bundles Black Friday. That's what I'm wondering. So you think if
they doorbust them at $250?
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. That's what I'm thinking, because the MSRP is now $300. So where is that going to land when they really want to move these things? Because you know they still want to move them. Just dropping the price like that isn't going to start moving these things out, because the games still aren't there, right?
John, so, they're going to ruin your Friday morning.
We'll see.
You know what though? It's a good way to have your Friday morning ruined.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're inching closer to me. They're inching closer. There used to be a wide gulf between us, but now we're in talking distance. I'm talking to the Wii U. I'm like, hey Wii U, what's going on? Hey, how's that new price?
So all right, John, let's take this. Let's say we roll around and
all right, James. I mean, it's cool. We've known each other for a long time.
You're talking to each other. You know,
why
you
want to take that step? Hey, whatever.
We roll around to December.
Uh huh.
You're friendly. You know,
and
nothing special.
Not usually, but no, that's drama. Fine. And Nintendo puts out a Wii U bundle, the same price. So you're still gonna have to pay your sales tax.
Yep.
Let's just set yourself to it.
Yep.
But this time it's got 3D World in it.
Hmm.
This is a $60 game. Again, it's a digital copy only.
Yeah.
But it's out there.
But you're right. It would be a slightly better value than Wind Waker because that's probably not a... Did they announce the official price of that yet? Is it 50?
It sounds like they have. Yes, $49.99.
So yeah, it's $50. So it's slightly less than a normal game.
I think you can also get a $60 one. Is that with the Ganondorf figurine or something?
It's $55, yeah.
Okay. But again, that's GameStop exclusive.
Yeah.
Right. But, so yeah, it's $50 regardless of the format you get, although you do get it sooner if you buy it on the eShop.
See, I was about to make fun of that, but I thought, you know...
No, it's genius.
If you're the kind of person who would spend $50 on a remake of Wind Waker when it's not even 10 years old, then you're probably the kind of person who would buy a Ganondorf figurine that comes with it.
But see, here's the thing. So Nintendo releases it earlier on the eShop to tempt people to use the eShop, which is what they want, obviously. They want you to...
I saw that. Yeah, that is smart. But the fact that it's the same price...
But see, they make it the same price and do all these little accents on the game box as a placation to retailers.
Right.
So they could snipe some of the sales from retail and not piss off the retailers because they've made the retail product demonstrably better.
You think they're straddling the line there. That's interesting.
I'm sure they are because they've talked about this. Remember when they talked about how games on the eShop are going to be the same price. The reason that came after that was because they valued their relationship with their retailers.
Yeah, which, you know, they have to when they're selling stuff like the 2DS.
Yeah, now, I mean, this is a really... I mean, there's a lot of politicking just in this Wind Waker that makes it almost more interesting than this game itself.
Like we've seen with Pikmin 3, if you went to play the demo at GameStop, you would be able to purchase a digital code and get the game a day early. But this is not the case here, right? Like, it's not a GameStop digital exclusive for 2 weeks.
No, you don't have to get off the couch
if
you want to buy this early.
No, it's
because that is the start of a terrible, terrible trend.
Oh, I agree. Going to the store to buy digital game purchases?
It's already happened.
Yeah, not a fan of that either.
I think it's okay as an option for people who don't have credit cards and stuff like that.
Of course, yeah.
But for me, That better
actually,
not be
you know,
the only way.
This isn't really that dissimilar from the green Luigi box, which cost a little bit more and came out later, but it was this like really kind of like luxury item-looking game box.
Yeah, like you would go out of your way to get it, but only the people that really cared would buy it.
Yeah, I mean, that was such a play like, hey, retailers, we're going to put this on our eShop for cheaper and earlier. But here's this super cool one that our hardcore fans are going to want to buy.
It sticks out. It's going to attract so much eyeball in the store, you know.
I kind of wonder, like I bought New Super Mario U digitally, but I'm kind of tempted to buy Luigi box just because it looks cool. I mean, I've got the big shelf of games. It would stand out on the shelf. And I've got disposable incomes. It's not a money issue. It's just
and of course, you've got the really, really crazy people who are considering right now to buy both the digital and the physical release.
I love those people. Yeah. I love those people. They're the nuts. And I adore them. They're great.
And then you have the psychos who are buying Pokemon Rumble U figurines.
Hey. Iwata needs a yacht, and for a while it looked like he wasn't going to get it.
Yeah, he's coming back.
You
now.
Got his back, though. You got his back, though, James.
Hey, John, why don't you read the next email?
All right, the next one. Tripon writes, with the recent news that GameStop has decided to start a new quote-unquote vintage line that started with a one-year release of Xenoblade and a three-year release of Metroid Prime Collection, it seems that Nintendo is missing a good opportunity to re-release their classic titles for a group of people who, for one reason or another, didn't pick up the game at the time. Basically, Nintendo at least needs to release these games on the eShop and hopefully do another print run of titles that people will buy.
Amen.
Yes.
Not going to happen.
Yeah, there are such hurdles to releasing Wii games on the eShop. The first thing would be that Wii games don't run natively on the Wii U. I mean, they do. But not on the Wii U, like not
Here's
on the eShop.
Gee, I think they can get around that because if you look at how they have sort of sideloaded that Wii U channel into the Wii mode.
Mm-hmm.
So effectively, when you're in Wii mode, the Wii U thinks it's a Wii, but they give you this warp hole to get back out to the real menu by loading it as a channel in the Wii menu as if it was, you know, the news channel.
It's some Alice in Wonderland bullshit.
It's really strange how they pulled it off. But if they can do that, I feel like they can take fully downloaded game files from the eShop off the Wii U hard drive and sideload those in the same way in a custom channel into the Wii menu. So I feel like they probably could pull it off.
But you don't think they would be limited with like that weird limitation they've self-imposed on themselves, the 512, yeah, the 512 megs of memory?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's something that they can just kind of fix in software. Now that it really is running in software and it's not a hardware thing.
I would think that there's got to be ways to handle this. There just has to be. And I think I don't think Nintendo didn't think about this ahead of time. Like, when they were designing something, like, we're going to sell Wii games on this later, guys, just as an FYI.
Surely.
Yeah, they're not stupid. We just spent, you know, a few minutes talking about how they're gaming the retail online market. They know what they're doing. So the trick here is, you know, is it just that they haven't finished it yet? That it's difficult to produce emulators for the Wii and they're just still working through bugs and stuff? Or is it just because they want to give other stuff time to breathe?
What I think is they want to wait until the Wii games are far enough removed into the past that they think there will be a demand for them.
That's true.
Because they disappear off the used game shelves. I went to
GameStop the other day and they still have two full shelves of Wii games. And they're like $5 a piece. I just walked up and said, I'll take these 8 and walked out.
So those will get thin eventually as the market sort of settles down. And the games will be, you know, farther in your memory and you'll be more nostalgic for them. I mean, you could be nostalgic for a game that came out in 2006.
Mm-hmm. I'm nostalgic for games that came out in 2009.
There you go.
Granted, I still own them, so I just turn around and play them. But
I think in the fullness of time, this will become a higher priority for them.
See, I think to me, the priority would have to be games that are more famous now than when they came out. Mm. I think you call Atlas and say, yo, we want to put Trauma Team on the eShop. Make it happen.
Sure. I mean, Xenoblade's a much more potent example. But
well, yeah, yeah. We just said Xenoblade, so I want something else.
Yeah, but yeah. Pikmin 2 Wii Edition.
Yeah. I think that one, though, they definitely want to give Pikmin 3 time to breathe.
Conduit, right, for sure.
Conduit 2, actually?
Shoot Space Abe Lincoln!
Conduit 2 might actually fit that bill because of the weird cult status of people who ironically love the ending. What about doing reprints? I mean, this is something Nintendo historically has really only done through a player's choice or Nintendo Selects line.
Sure.
And they usually do it once. So these aren't necessarily games they're going to keep printing for the next 10 years because they're that famous, but they usually do one reprinting and it's generous enough that they generate plenty of copies and it becomes easy for anyone to find it later on who would want to.
So, I mean, I'm okay if they decide to do a reprint of Xenoblade because I'll go buy myself a U.S. version and I'd be happy.
That'd be fantastic, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think really more people deserve to play that game.
Oh, yeah. I'd say it's all around. That game deserves to be played by more people.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And now for only $90, you too can experience, you know. And that's really sad. I mean, you can probably, for a lot less than that, you can probably get a European copy.
Oh, definitely. I mean, so somebody was bitching about that on Twitter a few weeks ago, and I pointed them in the direction of the site Johnny and I used, and they bought it for like $30.
I have the European version, played it for, you know, 70, 80 hours, finished the game, and I don't speak a word of European. Right. So, I mean, don't be scared of it.
I'm spent 5 or 6 years studying European language.
Yeah, the thing is, you have to hack your Wii, and perhaps these people don't have a Wii. They have a Wii U, and they'd rather stay away from hacking.
No, that's definitely a true statement. Or they don't have the original Wii. They have that weird McDonald's hamburger box thing.
Wait, I see a report that you can now install the homebrew channel on Wii U as long as it's in Wii mode?
You can, but do you want to?
Oh, why not? I mean, why
not?
Like,
at this point, like, it's a very new console, and maybe...
Yeah, maybe Nintendo comes and drops the hammer on you later.
I kind of doubt it. I don't see why they never have before. I don't see why they would start now.
But they kind of did, though. They've dropped the hammer on, like, for a while. They wouldn't service your hacked Wii U. Your hacked Wii.
Hmm. I guess it depends on how concerned you are about service. That's a fair point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but at this point, the Wii U is still expensive, so people are probably still concerned. The Wii is less of a big deal, you know, because it's so cheap.
Yeah, but if you're already hardcore enough to be interested in playing Xenoblade, maybe you're willing to take a risk like that. Maybe you already have two Wii U's because you're, I don't know, somebody. I'm sure there's a person who owns two.
We're talking about the stragglers here.
He probably works. He's probably on the staff, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Actually, his name is Justin. Yeah.
Actually, I would say Uncle Bob in the forum probably has all the Wii U's.
Yeah. Yeah. The deluxe and the basic.
No, I mean, he has all the Wii U's ever made.
He owns
all 3.6 million.
Yeah.
He's the Wii U godfather. Just wait. One day it's going to become really popular and every single person will have to go to him and they'll pay his price.
The Wii U's first child will be a masculine child.
On that note, let's move on to the final email this week. It's from Remy. And Remy writes, "Do you think modern Nintendo has become creatively bankrupt? The recent slew of games they announced at E3 are all shockingly iterative. And all of the reviews for Pikmin 3 sing the same song. It's a good game that feels an awful lot like the Pikmin games we played a decade ago. The freshest game coming out for the Wii U this fall is probably the Wonderful 101, a Platinum game. What happened to crazy experiments like Chibi-Robo or Odama?" Neither one made by Nintendo. "They weren't perfect, but at least they were cool new ideas that had never really been seen before. Maybe these games sold badly, but blazing new trails can also be incredibly lucrative. Just like at Minecraft..." Excuse me. "Just look at Minecraft or any number of indie games."
I will not. You can't
Thoughts
name
on
me.
All of this?
Yeah, well, as you've pointed out, Chibi-Robo and Odama were not made by Nintendo. I am wondering right now what Skip is doing.
Yeah, me
because
too.
For a while they were busy with the art style games. They were busy with what's it called, Captain Rainbow, which we never got here, unfortunately. Well, or fortunately.
I think they did make that Chibi-Robo game that just came out on 3DS in Japan.
Oh, okay. And that thing is North America bound, as far as I know. I think I've read something about
it.
It is, yes.
I don't think it's really a sort of 3D platforming adventure on the scale of the old Chibi-Robo games,
no.
But it sounds cute. You know, I hope it's engaging and doesn't feel like a mini game.
Right.
I'm not real clear on just how much depth there is to it right now, but I'm still excited for that series to come back. It has been a long time.
Yeah. As for Odama, who was that? Was that
That was Yute Saito.
That was Yute Saito!
Arrow Porter, yes.
Yeah.
Yute Saito of Insanity fame.
So I guess that kind of answers the question, like, what happened to those quirky games? Well, they used to be retail releases late in the console's life, and now they're kind of being released digitally, and they're smaller.
You know, I mean, he says...
To be fair, those were also very late-generation GameCube games.
But, you know, Wonderful 101 is kind of there. I mean, that's...
No, I agree.
I mean, that's a very interesting kind of experimental game that Nintendo funded.
Yeah.
I mean, it was kind of interesting to read that game originally, the first mock-up of that game, was it had Nintendo characters.
I got to tell you, I do not feel good about that game's sales potential.
No, I don't either.
I think it's probably going to be pretty good. It's going to have a lot of you know, really big fans who will praise it, but... I just don't really see that game.
I mean, that's sort
I mean, it's
of
not going to do as well as Pikmin 3, and Pikmin 3 is not doing
that's,
spectacularly
well, that's sort of
right
the
now.
Platinum
Did you see
curse,
the sales figures in Japan for it?
It's I'm sold, sure they were
no. It sold 5,000 copies last
oh
week.
My God.
Last week
in Japan. In two days, but that's still worse first week sales than like Anarchy Reigns.
Yeah, I mean, like I don't even know if it made the top 20. Like it sold pretty bad.
That's scary. It'll do better than that probably over here.
Like
but.
I said, I mean, part of that's unfortunately the Platinum curse. I mean, they haven't really had games sell well, and I don't quite know why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, like the first week of Revengeance was over 200K.
Yeah, but I mean, that wasn't really a game they made on behalf of Konami. It wasn't like a game that they created. I mean, their stuff that's theirs in house, I really doesn't tend to do that great. And I think it's because they make these hyper niche games, and I mean they are. I mean, Bayonetta is the least niche game they made, if you think about it. And that's
I mean, I think Vanquish is mainstream in some ways.
It's hyper Japanese though.
It is, but it's also just I think immediately cool regardless of you know cultural context.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't do that great either, you know. So for whatever reason, it didn't. I don't think they really had the push behind it that they needed. From was Sega, I guess, published that.
For I think so.
Vanquish, I think it was Sega.
Yeah,
but you know, I really like Platinum, and I'd say much like Atlus, they're a developer I really respect, even though a lot of their games probably aren't really my cup of tea. But I love that they're so creative and they keep trying all these different weird things, and they're trying to make games that really other people aren't making.
They have big personality.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, like, they have three or four, like, Japanese rock star game developers who you probably know their name. If you heard it, you would recognize it and you could think of a couple games they worked on. It's like, it's extremely unusual for a company of that size to have more than one person of that stature.
Right.
And they have three or four
because
they were all the Capcom superstars before they left.
Yeah.
And they themselves are the, and you can feel they're tangibly, they're the personality that drives that company.
Yeah, they are directing these games. They're not like executive producing them.
Right.
Like, they're extremely hands-on.
And to that point, if you don't follow Kamiya on Twitter, you need to. Because he's fucking irascible.
He's quite a curmudgeon.
And the best part is in his a lot of interview, you're like, this can't be the same guy. And like, he's trying so hard to behave himself. You can just feel it in the interview.
Yeah.
As for Nintendo's creativity, what do we think?
I mean, talk plenty about Platinum's creativity, but Nintendo, I do think, you know, I was okay up until just maybe a couple years ago, but I do feel like these iterations and the sequels to the same franchises over and over again are really kind of grating on me at this point. And a lot of the things that I really want and would like, and they're not going to be super sellers, but they're games that the fans really do care about, are not really getting made when there's really no good reason for it. I mean, I was just thinking today, it's been 10 years since the last 2D Metroid.
Yeah.
And think about how many like Kirby games, 2D Kirby games they've been since then, much less Mario games, which are just outlandish all over the place. So it's just some of their franchises that people really care about and that are a chance to tell more of a story and to develop some different characters. They're kind of being left by the wayside.
I mean, speaking of Metroid, I mean, in that interim, there have been games that have effectively, you know, been ripoffs of Metroid that people have loved in the absence of Metroid.
And even more coming, by the way, because it's becoming a very popular indie frame. And I'm sorry, James, just close your ears for a minute. But there, I mean, Super Metroid is, but like, the indie game development tools are reaching a point of maturity at which people can actually make games that at least approach the design of Super Metroid. They're that sophisticated even from one or two people who aren't extremely experienced. And so some of these are going to be very bad and some of them are going to be extremely good, but it's got to the point where there's now almost like a genre because there's this army of people who grew up on Super Metroid and Metroid Fusion and Zero Mission as well. And they're obsessed with it like I am and a lot of other people, and they really want to make that kind of game. And I think this is like the first time in history that people have really had the capabilities and resources to do that. Mm-hmm. So Nintendo is getting left in the dust in that particular game design, and probably that's not the only one.
Yeah, but we're talking about, like, what kind of creativity are we talking about? Because right now we're just talking about them bringing back old franchises that they haven't resurrected in a long time.
I mean, maybe that's right? what they're talking about, but that, to me, that's not what I see. I mean, I'm not so worried about what franchise they wrap around the game. That's not a super concern of mine. I want to see them just create new experiences. If it's wrapped in a familiar, you know, wrapping, that's okay. I can live with that. Like, I kind of wish they had gone full nuts on Link's crossbow training that they had talked about. Because that would have, like, Terminator 2 guns arriving from the future? Holy shit, that would have been cool.
That would have been the most interesting thing Nintendo has developed in a long time.
Yeah, but I mean, they've acquired companies recently and that bring in their own creative ambiance. They've got people like Monolith who just build worlds for a living. That's what they do.
Well, and James, that's part of why you and I responded so strongly as Xenoblade. This is a level of completely original storytelling and characterization and world building that we haven't felt from a Nintendo game in so long.
But, you know, it's not even from a Nintendo game. It's just in general.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly there aren't many games made like Xenoblade on any system by any developer.
Right.
But in Nintendo, it's just compared to, you know, yet another Mario RPG, which, man, I like those games. But, dude, like, two in the span of 9 months is really pushing it.
No, it's fun. It's fun.
And that's the thing. They kind of keep coming out with these same franchises and kind of beating these same franchises to death while there's other franchises that people want that are kind of just, you know, left on the bench. You know, they tend to go back
to those other franchises when they feel like there's a need to. I mean, like, the GameCube saw F-Zero and saw, you know, like all these creative games, and that was like one of Nintendo's most dire hours, you know, like they were not doing
But that was also over 10 years ago though, you know, I mean, it's just been, I just think they could space out these things better than they are.
The Wii was so successful that Wii Music selling a couple of millions was kind of deemed a failure. I don't know, like I feel like with the Wii U, their expectations are going to change again, like, and they might get a little bit more experimental.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, but I think we'd be sitting here. I mean, if they made you know, 3 F-Zero games over the next year, I mean, I think we'd be seeing the same thing. And that's kind of, I feel, what they do with other franchises.
Yeah.
If you want original franchises from Nintendo, I guess you have to turn to the eShop. And right now, not so much the Wii U eShop, but I'm sure that's going to come. More the 3DS eShop, because you've got Intelligent Systems, I think, that worked on Pushmo and Pulmo. You've got Game Freaks that worked on that rhythm game. I can't remember the name right now. Sure. So, yeah, that's where you have to go. There's perhaps not really space for that kind of little, you know, creative. Well, anyway, sorry. There's no space on the shelves for small new IPs like that. But yeah, you got to go where the games are.
Well, Nintendo may very well think that the Wii U is too costly to develop for, to make those, to take those kind of risks.
Jeez, I hope not. That would be tragic.
I really don't think that's the case, because they talk about, you know, they've talked about the Nintendo, what do they call it? Their Unity based kit. They've got the.
Well, they're not going to make their own games in
No,
that system,
but I though. Think they have their own way devised mechanisms to make game development affordable. I don't think they would be going through that big initiative if their own development process wasn't at least markedly affordable for them.
I think that's a bit of a stretch, because I think the Unity stuff's being driven primarily from the West. But I can't say for sure.
No, I just want to say that, you know, while I do miss, you know, some franchises from Nintendo and some of their more off-the-wall things that they've published, let's not sell Pikmin 3 short. I mean, it's freaking amazing.
No one's arguing the quality. It's just the excitement factor. It's the idea
surprises.
That I'm playing a game where I'm doing something new, which every video game, you know, really has ascribed to for the past 30 years. They always want to give you something that you haven't done before.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Like, it's been a long time since I played Pikmin, so maybe I just feel like I'm doing something new because it's not something I've done over and over again in the past 10 years.
Which, you know, when other companies do that, it's called like a throwback or a reboot or almost like a retro-style experience. Like, look, we made a new Bionic Commando in the style of that really old Bionic Commando that you remember.
Yeah, and that felt fresh, right?
But they don't call it Bionic Commando 2.
They call it Bionic Commando Rearmed. So they should call this Pikmin Replanted.
On the subject of them going creatively bankrupt, I don't think really that's what's happening. To me, I don't. What it
dramatic wording.
What it feels to me is that, you know, when Nintendo gets in sort of a bad place, we've seen them do this before. They get a little bit desperate and they have to fight a little bit harder for their success. And it seems in the past that it's kind of thrown them in very creative directions. And that's how they came up with something as revolutionary as the Wii and a lot of the initial content that they developed for it and the DS, which is a real crazy idea. And I think they were really scared at the time.
Oh, yeah.
Of
I mean,
like
the
PSP.
DS especially. I mean, they couched as a third pillar, for God's sake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. They were
which
hedging
a total
their bets so
parachute.
Much. So the thing that concerns me, and I think it may be the cause of this effect that we're seeing, which is that the new lineup of games they have really isn't pushing the envelope very much. To me, the problem is that in this case with Wii U, they've clearly seen for a while that it's bad, and they certainly knew it leading up to this year's E3, and their response was not to go that much more bold and really do something extremely fresh with it. It was to go just crawl back in your cave,
exactly.
Make the things that feel really safe, do the things that you know have sold well in the past.
Yep.
And I think the problem is those were the things they were selling towards the end of the Wii lifespan. So now we've got these back-to-back sort of like partial generations, late Wii generation, early Wii U generation, and it seems like they're making the same games in both.
I mean, in the case of Donkey Kong, that's explicitly what they were selling late in the Wii. I mean, yeah. It's I mean, it's really but close.
Yeah,
it's
and like got a remake in the interim. Yeah,
it's true, we did. I forgot about that.
Which is ridiculous. And but my hope and the reason I'm kind of optimistic about this is that I don't think that's the same thing as them being creatively bankrupt. And what I think is that the software management side, which is Miyamoto's job, you know, among other right. people, but the software management side of it has said, you know, we want you to be really safe and make these games in these super established franchises, a very familiar gameplay that we know we can get out there quickly. And the people who are making that stuff are being suppressed. And when they get a chance to release all the creative energy that they've been building up while they make these more typical traditional games, there's a lot of really exciting stuff that could come out of that. And I feel like that's very much possible.
You know, I think that you saw those creative explosions with games like Galaxy, where they're just like, okay, let's go crazy. Let's get super nuts. And yeah. they actually talked about how they were told to rein it in a little bit on Galaxy 2 with like the story. Like, no. Shut that shit down.
Yeah, just go super experimental. Just don't care about telling the story. Make more upside down levels. You know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're also trying to dig the Wii U out of its hole. So yeah. they just want to go. They just want to.
They're putting up sandbags.
Yeah, they're putting up the sandbags, and they just want the stuff that they know is going to sell. You know, right. they want to you know sell to their core fan base right now because those are the ones that are buying the Wii U and buying Wii U games.
Right.
So they're just being very conservative
right now. And experimental games take longer too.
And they
go through a lot of iterations, just like, you know, Talent Maker and, you know, Talent Studio back on GameCube, all that weird stuff. They go through a lot of prototypes before they finally come up with one that they feel like they can.
Well, like we mentioned Odama, but how many E3s was that game at?
Oh, like three?
Yeah.
And the controls were completely different every time. Mm-hmm. Like it used the bongos at
I wish
point.
It came out with bongo control.
Yeah, me too.
We keep hearing that Nintendo has kind of this vault that game concepts go back to, like, until they feel like they can really do them justice and have a product that sells. With Steel Diver, do we think that they've scraped the bottom of the barrel?
I think it crashed. I think the submarine crashed the bottom of the barrel, took on water, and everyone on board died.
It's just like it was literally the last item in that vault, and they were like,
okay. Guys, we got this fucking Steel Diver thing.
I'm done picking on Steel Diver.
Oh, look.
I can't do any more harm to that game. It's had enough.
You couldn't have done more harm to that game when it came out.
Yeah, but really, I do feel like we're at a period where, because of the bad situation that Wii U is in, the software lineup from Nintendo has become like almost a battle between the really creative expression and what needs to be done for the company's bottom line. Mm-hmm. And I feel right now the bottom line is winning, and maybe it needs to temporarily. But what I hope is that things stabilize and the really, really artistic, creative, ingenious people at Nintendo's internal studios get a chance to go out there and say, okay, go out there and make 5 new franchises. Some of them are going to be miserable failures, but one of them might be the next Animal Crossing.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing is, what they need is something to get people excited about the console, right? And none of these games that have come out so far outside of the Nintendo, I mean, kind of the industry at large, get it kind of pull them in. And get them on the side of the Wii U, because right now the only people that are cheering for Wii U are the people that will always cheer for Wii U and every right. Nintendo console, right? But there hasn't been that game that's actually kind of, you know, made everybody kind of stand up and look over and say, hey, Jesus, man, the Wii U has some good games.
You remember what it was for GameCube, right? Metroid Prime.
Yeah, something like that.
That was the game that all the people who'd already bought a PS2 looked over and said, well, shit, now I got to buy a GameCube.
Exactly. Yep, that game has yet to come out, but... Who knows?
Maybe
I mean,
it will be
know.
Metroid Prime once again.
Hey.
I kind of doubt it. But that's going to have to wrap up this episode, everybody. Thank you so much for writing in. We had wonderful questions this week and a lot more that we just couldn't get on the show as usual. But you can always send yours to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. And before we go, I want to send everybody a reminder that Retroactive is still going, and we're going to be talking about that game pretty soon. Maybe at least partially next week before the big 350. So Pandora's Tower, it's a game that's highly available. It's out in every region. The discussion's been pretty good so far, but it could still use a lot more inputs. And if you're playing the game or if you start playing the game, hope you go over to the forum thread and leave a comment in there, because it helps the show out a lot once we have that discussion. And finally, I wanted to mention a plug for a couple other podcasts. Our sister podcast, or maybe brother podcast is more appropriate, Connectivity, NWR Connectivity, has just reached their 100th episode. It's a really big milestone. They've done a fantastic job with it. And in fact, they invited us, very kind, to invite three of us to go over there and do one of their patented Jeopardy segments.
Well, I didn't actually show
John
up.
John was so. There. You know this from the crater that was his score.
You were there at least at the beginning and the end.
Yeah.
We had a really, really fun time, James and John and I, doing Jeopardy. And if you've never heard the Jeopardy segments, they're always entertaining. I think ours might be the best yet.
The worst, Johnny. Depending on your perspective. I don't
know. Or maybe the worst.
The biggest affront to Alex Trebek.
Best example of why never to have a Jeopardy segment again.
It was so much fun, and there's a lot more included on that episode. I haven't heard it yet, but I know they got really big plans for it. So go check that out. It's a really good show, and you should be listening to that too. And one last thing before we go, real quick. My music podcast has been dormant pretty much all summer long. I think it had been like 3 months, but we finally got out a new episode for Discover Music Project. It's about The Replacements, which is a really interesting band, really good topic, and I had a former RFN guest host, Nate Andrews, helping me out on that one, and he knew a lot about the band. I knew nothing, so I'll be your avatar. If you know nothing about The Replacements, that's certainly no impediment. That's what the show's all about. That's on iTunes. You can head over to crosstalk.com with a W.
Because Carl can't spell.
So that's all for this week. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and we'll be back next time with even more Radio Free
That's
Nintendo.
A threat.
Bye. Later.
What the fuck?
The cow jumped over the moon. That's the thing. Pikmin 3 is supposed to be the next best, you know, like the latest evolution of that series, and it feels more like a throwback because it has been that long. It's just, we like, you know, for Pikmin 3 to be this big heralded marquee release, to see that it's almost like a kind of like a retro reimagining of Pikmin and Pikmin 2. I think that's why people are feeling a little bit let down by it. It's not that it's a bad game, but it just doesn't have that, you know, that real excitement that you want out of I've said it before. I think the expectations on Pikmin 3 are kind of unfair. It's just how the release schedule lined up. That game wasn't meant to be a huge system seller. And by the time it came out, they needed one of those so bad that there's just this feeling that it really needs to be this epic, massive game changer. And it's not, it never was meant to be.
It's not, but you know, like I finished the story and then I went and got all the fruit and then I started the missions. I don't think I did the missions in Pikmin 1 and 2. I just want to keep playing this game. I was thinking about restarting it or trying to find like Wii Play Control, the first Pikmin game. It's really, really solid. I haven't felt like this about a game in a while.
I'm so glad you like it that much, and I wish I felt the same way, because I've enjoyed Pikmin 3 when I've been playing it, but it is not addicting me. It is not pulling me back in. I'm not that excited to go back and play a whole bunch more of it. I'm gonna, and it'll be fun when I do it, but it's not like the game I can't get out of my head, and it never has been since I started playing
it. And to me, as a person who played the first Pikmin, I thought, okay. Like, I got the quality, it just didn't do it for me. Like, to me, hearing that, it's that, and then people go, and it's like, you know, 7-8 hours, and it's that, and it's, I'm like, no, I'm not interested, I'll wait it out.
Yeah, but it's more than 7 or 8 hours, really, like, if you try to find everything.
But then, if
and
you
also,
try to find
you
everything,
played the
sure.
original, and you played the original with a GameCube controller.
So, yeah,
right?
Well, no, I didn't,
That
yes.
changes things a lot. That
changes things a lot. But it wasn't about the gameplay, it was just the game itself just didn't, it wasn't like,
it's just the same design.
Yeah, if you're not enamored with the game concept,
right.
I mean,
it had nothing
really
to do with the fucking GameCube controller.
Sure, but if you've played Pikmin 1, you've only played like as Olimar, and you haven't done the multitasking thing with several
Which,
characters.
Which, again, I find has little to do with how I play the game. Maybe that's just my style. Maybe it's because I'm bad at it, but I don't use the multitasking unless they throw me a puzzle where it's absolutely required. I have to keep up with all that shit.
Have you started the missions yet? Because you do
no,
need
I'm
to
still
do that.
The story.
Hmm. Well, you can start emissions at any time. And
I don't think I want to do that. What
Guillaume
I'm
is an event. We will call this game of the year. He will not shut up.
Yeah, no, clearly.
No,
Guillaume, you're really close to getting the shittiest script I've ever written and now play.
No, but there are like basic functions that you need to use and that make the game more fun when you use them. And you need to use them in the missions, maybe not so much in the story mode, because you've got so much freedom.
Well, then why
right?
didn't, like, but see, to me, that's a failure of level design in the story mode. That
Well, no, it's just that the story mode is easier than the missions. I don't have, like, the missions are
Oh,
the
game being too
people.
Easy is not my problem.
Right.
That's not my problem at all. So playing the more difficult missions is not going to make me enjoy it more.
But that never happens to you? Like, you play the, you know, like, on a harder difficulty, and you were kind of, you know, just doing... Like, you were basically just... I don't know
coasting.
How to express
coasting.
This. Yeah, like, and you weren't really using, like, the controls to their full potential and stuff like that, but faced with actual challenge, all of a sudden, oh shit, I have to learn this game. And then you enjoy it more.
You know, people said that would happen with Mighty Switch Force, and no. It didn't. If I'm not enjoying the game on a really deep level to begin with, I enjoy Pikmin 3, but it's not, like, my favorite thing ever, you know, and... I don't think they've improved it very much in terms of the interface or the playability. I think it's
yeah,
got
but
a lot
you,
of the
you
same
haven't
problems
used the interface.
As before.
You haven't played the game, Johnny. All you've done is
no, but
baby
I mean,
shit.
Like, if they give you new tools, and you don't use them, yeah, like it is a fault of the design of the game if they don't force you to use them, but they do in the missions. Anyway,
if you have a jackhammer,
yeah,
every game
just,
is a gamepad.